Hello and welcome to On the South Coast here on Burst Radio. I'm Daniel Sansom.
And I'm Liam Baldock.
And we will be discussing many topics regarding the government's plans for NHS cuts as we are with you for the next half an hour.
We will have live interviews from MPs, NHS patients and nursing students as we bring you up to date with information about how the local area is being affected by the NHS cuts.
We'll be picking up on our top story that today the Royal Bournemouth Hospital has been chosen as a preferred location for the county's principal A&E centre. As well as this, the major development in the junior doctors dispute has emerged in the last 24 hours, and we will come to that shortly.
We'll also be discussing how Dorset hospitals in general are facing changes in the next 5 years, as well as outlining the key issues facing our National Health Service. And finally, we look at what may well happen to it if we do leave the EU.
The Royal Bournemouth Hospital has been chosen as a preferred hospital for the county's A&E service. This comes as a result of Dorset Clinical Commissioning Group services review that suggests Poole Hospital is to be chosen as a preferred location for planned care.
Now, whilst planned care lies in Poole's hands, the review also suggests that the Royal Bournemouth and the Poole Hospital are in contention to be redeveloped to take 80% of the county's A&E services.
The CCG say cost and location are the key reasons the Royal Bournemouth Hospital has been recommended for development as the county's major emergency hub.
CCG Transformation Director Phil Richardson said the key reasons for choosing Bournemouth are first of all access to the population served by the hospital, as Bournemouth serves Dorset and Hampshire.
Without these structural changes, the CCG say that services face a funding shortfall of £200 million by 2021. This is a clear result of the NHS financial difficulties we are all aware of. We're lucky enough to have Barry Thompson on the phone, Chair of the West Dorset Labour Party. Hi Barry, welcome to the show and thank you for taking part.
Hello there, I must correct you, I'm Chair of the Dorchester and District Labour Party.
Okay, so I apologise for that.
Vice Chairman of the West Dorset.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Party.
Sorry about that.
I don't know what upset my chairman.
Okay.
No worries, Barry.
Thank you.
That's okay. So, Barry, yeah. We've mentioned briefly that the CCG's review triggered this decision. Do you think this is the main reason behind it, or do you think it's been in contention for a while?
I think it's been in contention for a while because we had the other thing of moving the children's services from Dorchester to Bournemouth, and then they suggested moving it to Yeovil. So this has all been brewing for a long time.
Okay, yeah. And also, we were wondering, how is this going to affect Poole Hospital, do you think, in the long run? And, I mean, could this potentially be a good move for both parties or a bad move? What do you think?
I think it's a bad move because it's already come out that if somebody has an accident in the west of Dorset, say in Lyme Regis, they'll have to go all the way to Bournemouth. They will not send them to Dorchester overnight. And also heart attack patients will be sent direct to Bournemouth, which is a longer distance.
Okay, yeah. So as well as Poole's current A&E services, how will Dorchester Hospital's A&E be affected?
Well, apparently it will carry on much the same, except from 10 o'clock at night till 6 in the morning, I think they will all be diverted to Bournemouth if it comes about.
Okay, brilliant. And as you touched on a minute ago, one main concern people have is the fact that the Royal Bournemouth is quite far out of the way.
Yes.
And especially for Poole and Dorchester citizens, but also Lyme Regis, like you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a long way from Lyme Regis to Bournemouth.
Yeah, and how do you think it will be dealt with? Do you think there's a way of dealing with this or not?
Personally, I'd like to see it stay at Poole and not be altered.
Okay.
But I think this is all a big cost-cutting exercise again. It's all because the money is scarce from central government.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've heard lots of things. I know the roads aren't fantastic around the Bournemouth Hospital anyway, and it's so far out. So, we can understand what you're saying. We just want to say thank you very much for coming on our show, Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Barry. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank Have you. A nice
Bye.
Day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
With news filtering through in the last 24 hours on a contract being agreed between the Department of Health and the British Medical Association, we thought it would be a good idea to briefly discuss the issue that led to this new agreement.
So, junior doctors working full-time start on a basic salary for 40 hours a week during standard working times of 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on the weekdays. They get more pay if they work outside these hours, although the amount per hour varies according to a banding system. But the amount of extra hours a junior doctor can work will depend on what type of medicine they specialise in. Since GP trainees generally don't have the same opportunities for increasing their income as hospital trainees do, they're currently paid a supplement to make up the difference. In 2012, the Department of Health said that there needed to be changes to the contracts, which set the terms and conditions of employment of the NHS's 53,000 junior doctors in England.
And yes, the British Medical Association began negotiations, but the talks broke down in October 2014, and last month the BMA refused to re-enter negotiations and actually accused the government of a heavy-handed approach. Ministers then said they would impose a new contract on all junior doctors, starting in August 2016. The BMA urged the government to stop the new contracts as they will overwork doctors and put patients at risk.
However, just last night a deal was finally agreed between the Department of Health and the BMA. The offer will now be put to a vote of BMA members. But there are fears at Union that the profession could reject the deal despite it believing it is the best and the final way out of the row. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt described the deal as a win-win for government and junior doctors.
And a host of NHS leaders have already come out to urge junior doctors to sign up to it. The BMA has said it will be urging members to accept the terms, and we'll be explaining why in a series of roadshows.
Now, the details of the contract are as follows. Weekends no longer being divided up between normal and unsocial hours. Instead, a system of supplements will be paid which depend on how many weekends a doctor works over the course of a year.
Also, extra support will be made available for doctors who take time out, such as women who go on maternity leave, to enable them to catch up on their training and thus qualify for pay rises, after there were claims women were being unfairly penalised.
Junior doctors now getting an enhanced role in advising and liaising with the independent guardians, who keep an eye on the hours of doctor work.
Now, the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said, "We welcome this significant agreement, which delivers important changes to the junior doctor's contract necessary to deliver a safer seven-day NHS. This deal represents a definitive step forward for patients, for doctors, and for the NHS as a whole." And Hunt also went on to say that I don't say I was responsible for the industrial action, because I think that this was a decision taken by the BMA and essentially caused by the fact that at the time there was no willingness to engage on the big issues that we needed to resolve to deliver a seven-day NHS.
Now, Dan, one of the big things in the news at the moment is obviously the EU referendum coming up on June the 23rd. Now, will we stay or will we go? But one of the big things that comes under this is the NHS and how this may be affected, whether we do take up Brexit or not.
Yeah, definitely. And as we just mentioned a minute ago with the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, he's actually stated that the NHS will face budget cuts, falling standards and an exodus of overseas doctors and nurses if the UK does leave the EU.
Yeah, well, I mean, he argues that the NHS budget already being under pressure, funding levels can only be maintained if the British economy remains strong. The government's making progress in employing 11,000 extra doctors and 12,000 extra more nurses, and this could be threatened by the Brexit.
And yeah, and I read somewhere that we could lose some of the 100,000 skilled EU workers who work in our health and social care system.
Well, supporters of the Leave campaign argue that Brexit could save the NHS. Current and retired NHS staff have pointed out that £350 million a week we send to Brussels bureaucrats could be used on the NHS staffing funds.
Yeah, and Conor Burns, who is a Conservative MP and representative for Bournemouth West, I managed to speak to him about 3 weeks ago now about what he thought about the NHS and whether leaving the EU will affect this.
Right.
And he argued that a lot of nonsense is being talked on both sides about this. And he has explained what he believes Hunt has actually been talking about.
Well, I mean, we know there's a lot of nonsense being talked from both sides and we don't know who to believe. So, I mean, it is one of these issues.
And yeah, and he believes that Hunt has actually believes something else rather than what he actually put forward.
I think Jeremy's referring to the UK having its own immigration policy rather than having unrestricted movement from the EU. Even under a system like the points-based system that Australia uses, there's no way we're going to be turning away doctors and nurses.
Doctors' pay is a main issue that's currently in the limelight as the main problem facing the NHS. But aside from that, there's actually a handful of problems we could sit here and discuss.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of the main reasons the NHS is under pressure is an ageing population.
And
there's actually more over 65s in the country now than under 16s. And this is a major reason why there's pressure on the healthcare service. And you wanted to mention about the growing population
well, I mean,
as well?
Population seems to be the main key in this. I think it's a recurring theme because we've got to talk about growing population too, which impacts the waiting lists, and they're massive now. The stress on the NHS is they have to supply for more in a time where they're having the money that's inputted into them reduced. We've been joined by an NHS patient, Daniel Dove, who's been a victim of these growing waiting lists. Hi Dan, so you're a student in the week and a paid football player on the weekends. So tell us, how did this issue arise?
Well, it was about last year, October. I was in a football match and in a tackle, and at the time I ruptured my ACL and didn't know at the time that's what I'd done, and went to the GP. They didn't know either. And then they referred me to a knee specialist, which was another further like couple of months wait. So yeah.
Okay, so how long did you have to wait for the initial MRI scan? And what effect has this had on your footballing career in result?
Well, the first MRI scan was scheduled to be about February, and then that got cancelled.
And why
then
was that?
They moved it to March. There was a problem with, I had a brace in my teeth. So they said I can't do it because it ripped my teeth out of the MRI scan. So, yeah, not a good idea. And then that got moved to March and had the MRI scan. And after that, I got the results in April, and it turned out I did rupture my ACL, so I have to have an operation now.
So I presume that means another year out of football for you?
Yeah, that's a frustrating thing, really. It's going to end up being probably about 2 years out of football, something that I've been playing my whole life, really. So very frustrating waiting.
And Dan,
it's going to end up being 2 years. So.
Sorry, yeah. And Dan, what do you think? Do you think anything can be done with these waiting lists, or is it just a case of the population's growing now and there's nothing we can do about it?
Well, in my case, it was the fact of the waiting list, but the fact that there's so many mistakes along the way. There's lack of communication from GPs to my specialists. They messed a couple of things up. So there's the waiting list is one problem, but there's a whole lot of other problems within the NHS that need sorting, really.
Okay.
All right, brilliant, Dan. Well, thank you very much for your input. Have a nice day, and we hope that ACL heals up as quick as possible for you.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Thank you, boys.
Okay, so obviously he mentioned his ACL, and that's a big blow for someone that age. And he said it wasn't just the waiting list, it was the errors that happened during the waiting list
definitely.
That could make this waiting list even longer.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why there were so many mistakes on the way is the fact that how the NHS is structured now, and the fact that it's all different organisations trying to run it, so maybe that's possibly a reason why.
Miscommunication, things happen like that. Well, I mean, we know that is. But, I mean, there are more issues than just that. We've got the costs of medicine and technology at the moment.
Yeah, and the cost of medicine and technology rising is meaning that, obviously, there's a pressure on the NHS. And one of those main reasons is because inflation in the NHS is much higher than in the real world. And I think that's causing a significant strain on the service. Also, the fact that there's obesity and other lifestyle factors that contributing towards that. We've got finite resources and there's an infinite demand, so there's no way we can get the balance right, I don't think.
I know what you're saying. At the moment, the government are trying to reduce the deficit, and you say about these finite resources, we don't have infinite resources, which is what we need due to the infinite demand. And with this deficit, the government can't pump as much money into the NHS. And cuts to the NHS in recent years has also affected student nurses and university fees. Lucky for us, we've been able to ask Beth Corden, nursing student at Bournemouth University, a few questions on this.
Do you think changing the nursing bursaries to loans would deter future student nurses?
Yes, I think it will. The bursary is an attractive prospect for especially people that have got families that need to support them, and people who have already got a degree before now who don't want to be taking on the second lot of debt. Also, it might affect people from lower income backgrounds who are worried about the debt. Family might not be able to help and support them. Because of the length of the course, it's really difficult for us to get jobs because we only get 4 weeks off in summer, so we don't have the time over the summer to work and earn extra money.
Okay, so in terms of the bursaries, do you believe that the government is doing this because only a few places can be offered as finite resources?
Government actually say that unis would be able to offer more places if it's not with the bursary, because they're not being commissioned places by Health Education England. But as it is at the moment, it's actually hard for some unis to get enough placements for students. They're having to go into private sectors. And if there are less students applying, would there actually be as many places needed.
So more nurses are being brought into the UK from countries like the Philippines. Do you think this is because the government is introducing loans which might discourage UK student nurses?
Yeah, in a way. They've actually been bringing nurses in from overseas for a long time, so it's not like a new thing, but it probably would mean there'd be more nurses coming in from overseas if less people trained in this country. And there's a lot of shortages in many hospitals as it is, so they're needing a lot more nurses either training here or from overseas, and if there are less people here, then they will have to bring more in. Yeah.
Obviously, we heard there about nurses coming from overseas.
Yeah, yeah.
We mentioned earlier about the Brexit.
Yeah, definitely.
What would happen there? I mean, we can't bring in nurses from overseas. Well, we potentially could, but there would be this big uproar about that.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue.
And it goes back to what Jeremy Hunt said, whether doctors and nurses, if we do leave the European Union, will they go back or will they stay? So following on from Beth, we've been wondering whether it would affect people even younger than aspiring doctors at university. Now, Becky Hepworth, who's a children's community nurse from the Isle of Wight, joins us on the phone now.
Hello.
Hi, Becky. Thanks for joining us on the show and giving up your time to speak to us.
You're welcome.
Hiya. Okay, so we were just wondering whether recent cuts to the National Health Service have had any effect on the way that you carry out your work.
Yes. Yeah, the budget, each department has its own budget, and obviously the purse strings are very tight at the moment. We are being constantly told to not overspend, to find ways of saving money, and I don't think it's affecting patient care directly yet, but if there is only a small amount of money coming into that budget, then it's like having your weekly shopping budget capped at only £100. If you get to the checkout and your budget is over £100, then you have to put something back. So I think at some stage it will start to affect patient care.
Right. So you mentioned obviously there's sort of this cap on how much you can spend. How are you managing that at the moment?
We've had to come up with different ways of working, and which isn't a bad thing, actually. I think the NHS is a very old machine, and it needs to be updated, and we need to think about innovative ways of working. We've had to think about looking at getting medical supplies from different companies that don't charge so much, different manufacturers of drugs, from pharmaceutical companies that are not charging as much, like different brands. So not always going for Marks and Spencer's type brand, but going for more Aldi brand, which actually is just as good, and it's exactly the same medication, but a fraction of the cost.
Right.
So there's little things like that we're having to look at as different departments to save money.
Okay, brilliant. And so do you think that the future cuts to the NHS will hinder child development, or do you think there's another way around this? I know that might be a bit of a difficult question, but...
That's a very big question.
Brave statement.
I think services are being cut to such a point that we are firefighting. So we are acting on the most important things. So, for example, health visitors and school nurses, their budgets are also being cut, and they deal with a lot of health promotion and healthy lives and sort of enforcing that children being brought up healthily.
Yeah.
Their budgets are being very much cut, and they're having to just firefight with those families that are already in problems, whereas before they would have been dealing with the children before the problems started to prevent those problems happening in the first place.
Okay. Some protesters fear that the Kingfisher Children's Ward and the special care baby unit at Dorset County Hospital in Dorchester would be closed. Do you think this is a major concern?
I think, like every acute hospital and every acute paediatric department, we're having to look at... So we are very much in a very similar situation on the island. We're having to look at different ways of managing patients patients and managing children, ill children. Right. And actually, there's a lot of research around that says that the majority of children admitted to general hospitals could perhaps be managed at home safely with increasing amounts of community support from community nursing teams. And so I think the Dorset remodelling is very much going to look at those different ways, and actually that's far better for the child and the family to be cared for at home, for there to be lots of health promotion about managing conditions at home safely and preventing these conditions becoming problematic and needing an inpatient stay. It's much better for the child, it's much better for the family, it's much better for their education to remain at home as much as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And I think with increased amount of community support, that is a very safe option that needs looking at.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, thank you very much, Becky. That's great.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your time. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Now, Becky talked about there that the NHS is sort of an old... It's very sort of maybe outdated. And do you think one of these reasons is because of the Health and Social... Well, do you think the Health and Social Care Act has helped to solve this at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, the government says it was vital in order to abolish layers of bureaucracy and things like that. So I do, and obviously primary care trusts, but...
Yeah, and obviously with the clinical commissioning groups, we've seen how that was behind the Poole Hospital... closing and moving to Bournemouth, perhaps.
Yeah, and, well, massive decisions are being made, obviously, and whether to say they're playing it safe or not is, well, it's up for grabs, really. But
Of course. And obviously, we're going on now to Dorset Hospitals and what they're planning on doing in the next 5 years, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dorset Hospitals are undergoing changes following the 2014 five-year forward view report published by NHS England, Monitor and the Trust Development Agency. My co-presenter, Dan, has more information on what's happening and what these changes mean for Dorset Healthcare. So, yeah. Dan, why was this five-year plan needed?
William, I've been doing a bit of research and the five-year forward document proposes a three-pronged approach of improved efficiency, demand management and an increase in funding from central government. And this has come about due to a combination of growing demand, no further annual efficiencies and funding, having produced a gap between resources and patients' needs of almost £30 billion a year by 2020 to 2021.
What are the ambitions for the outcomes of the new review then?
Well, the Dorset Healthcare are aiming for more patients to be provided with integrated care at home, and for community hospitals to have a more clearly defined function and purpose, equality between the integration of mental and community health services, and for Dorset Healthcare to be the natural provider of these services for people of all ages.
So, okay, in order to address the challenges and opportunities that the Trust will face over the next 5 years, does it have any goals or strategies that it could implement to help reach them?
Well, I think there are a number of goals that they're aiming to achieve throughout this five-year plan, and the strategies that the Trust are using include providing high-quality care, and the system is called First Time, Every Time. Another goal they're trying to achieve is to be a learning organisation, so they're doing this through maximising the current relationship with Bournemouth University that
it
has,
okay.
And promoting innovation, research and evidence-based practice, and also to ensure that all of the Trust's resources are used in an efficient and sustainable way.
Okay, well, obviously efficiency is a key thing. Why overall is there a need for a change?
So, well, I think there's a need for the change for many reasons, and the needs of patients in Dorset today are very different to what they were when the NHS healthcare system was set up in 1948. We now have people living for much longer, as we touched on earlier, with the ageing population. And Dorset actually has one of the longest life expectancy rates in the country, and the number of pensioners in the county is expected to rise by 30% just over the next decade.
Okay, so you talk about Dorset having one of the longest life expectancy rates in the country, but are these problems only being faced by Dorset?
Well, no, that's not the case at all. The problems we are currently facing, the NHS in England has recognised that these are actually national challenges, and that the health system has to adjust all across the country. In Dorset, we are facing up to these issues and preparing to take action because we are committed to ensuring everyone has access to safe, high quality, up-to-date and affordable healthcare in the future.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Dan.
No worries.
Okay, so as a recap of the show, we've talked about Poole Hospital.
Yeah.
We've talked about obviously what's happening with their A&E.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously Bournemouth adopting it and Poole becoming a planned care site.
Yeah,
Dan,
of course.
I want to ask your opinion on it.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, with the Poole Hospital.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. I'd like to hear what you think.
Well, I personally think the way it's going with the cuts, there's not really another option that we can do, and we've got to try and find the best possible solution. But obviously, it is putting people's lives at risk, which we definitely do not want to do. But I don't think at the moment there's another way around it. And Bournemouth is probably the most. It's got the largest population and as a sort of the best services, I believe. And I think the only downside is the fact we mentioned earlier is it's so far out of the way from everybody else in the county.
Right. Okay. Well, I can see where you're coming from. I'd like to counter that. Personally, I think obviously due to the cuts, we have to act. But by doing it in this way, see, I'm not too sure because people who are living, like our interview Barry said earlier, people who are living in Lyme Regis.
Yeah.
If that was me, I wouldn't want to travel all the way to Bournemouth. And as I said earlier, the roads around there are chaos.
Yeah.
Absolute chaos. And I mean, I know people who have been in A&E in the Bournemouth Hospital as it is, and they said that they can't deal with it as it is now.
Yeah.
I know there'll obviously be an increase in capacity and more people working there, but I think there could be other ways around it.
Yeah, of course. And also, we talked about the junior doctors as well, and obviously we've had that major development that the contract's been agreed. In your opinion, is it good all round? I know there's a chance that the voters may still reject it, but what do you think the outcome's going to be, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's good that they finally come to a decision. Obviously, hopefully it'll stop these strikes, but the thing you have to think of there is that they said it's the best thing possible.
Yeah.
Now, they have to see it as the best thing possible and they have to just go with it now. If they finally come to an agreement, I think they've got to kind of work out together.
Yeah.
They've got to work out together that, well, they've got to come to a decision together and they've got to take that now.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, personally, it is the best deal to take.
Well, I mean, it has been going on for some time, hasn't it? So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'd like to thank you, Dan, and I'd like to stop the show there.
Yeah, so thank you for joining us here on Burst Radio for our show on the South Coast. I've been Dan.
And I've been Liam.
And we'll see you again soon.